Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on day 6 of the Australian Open, where I've just glanced at the clock and seen that it's only 1:20 in the morning, and I suddenly felt a jolt of energy run through me, like, yes, early night incoming. Genuinely pumped about that. You find us at Tennis Podcast Towers. I'm here. David's here. Hello, David.
Hello. It's silly, isn't it?
Matt's here. Hello, Matt.
Hello. Yes, I got my rent out of the way yesterday. I'll be jolly today.
Although I've got what you've been at it a bit today. I mean, mostly by people that enjoyed it tremendously, and they, of course, are the sensible people. But there's been a bit of atting with counterpoints that, if time allows, I might put to you just for my own amusement.
I was called a whinging pom. Might put that in my Twitter profile.
Please, okay, please, what has happened on day 6 of the tennis? It is day 6 of the Tennis Podcast, but day 6 of the Australian Open. Do you know what, guys? I'm going to lead with Adrian Mannarino.
That's the first time that's ever happened, I think. And do you know, I think I heard him speak for the first time in my life today. I didn't realise until he started. I don't know what he sounds like.
Well, we know what he's got to say, because we now have an answer, everyone, to what is Adrian Mannarino doing. And that answer is tequila. It literally is tequila.
Yep. It goes so well.
Yep. He was asked for the secret of his success since turning 34, why he's having the best years of his career. And the first word that came out of his mouth was tequila.
It makes me happy. Adrian Mannarino beat Ben Shelton today, or tonight rather, 4 hours and 51 minutes. Matt and I watched the last two sets of this, two of five sets, of course. David, you commentated on the last set of it. I mean, Matt and I went out there to the Kia Arena to see the Ben Shelton show, and we saw a show, that's for sure, but there we are. We went out to the Kia Arena, sat down, sort of rubbing our palms together, thinking, yeah, this is just perfectly set up for Ben Shelton, isn't it? It's the perfect size of courts, the perfect time of day. It's twilight hour at Melbourne Park. He's got himself involved in a bit of a tussle, but he's just on top of it. You know, it's all perfect. Rowdy crowd. First rally we see is an around-the-net post forehand winner from Adrian Mannarino. And that just about summed it up, the experience, didn't it? I mean, yes, Ben Shelton did produce some heroics and some moments of spectacular, but basically Adrian Mannarino was somehow running that show.
He was. Well, one of the things he did was totally neutralise big Ben Shelton weapon, which is his serve. You know, it was absolutely extraordinary how these rallies that were playing out, it was almost like the serve hadn't happened. Because normally Ben Shelton will put the serve in and he will set up the point that way and he'll play them on his terms. But what was happening is he was banging these serves down. And Mannarino with his trampoline string racket was just putting his racket in the way, and it was coming back at Ben Shelton's feet, like before Shelton had really finished his very elaborate service motion. And suddenly we were in just a rally of flat ground strokes. And that was exactly what Adrian Mannarino was after.
There was a moment, because Shelton is quite selective as to when he brings the heat, when he rolls it, when he swings it. He's got all the serves. And look, if you hit the fastball all the time, your shoulder would fall off. And also, the opponent would get used to it. And you'd start missing and all the rest of it. But he decided to pull the trigger in one game, and he produced a 140 and then a 142, and they both came back, and Mannarino won both the points.
He was having far more success with kick serves and slower pace pace. I mean, the speed of that serve was not troubling Adrian Mannarino one bit, exactly as Matt described, both of you described. Ben Shelton's biggest serve in the sport became a sort of clay court rally starter serve in that match. It was unreal. And Mannarino was exerting absolutely no effort in doing so. He's literally just sticking out his arm. It's not even really a swing. His arm's just there. The ball's hitting the racket and it's pinging off.
His hand-eye coordination, and with that little short take back on the forehand. I mean, he's a bit of a genius, really.
it was such a fascinating matchup. Like, they just have totally different approaches to the sport. Like, even down to the fact that, you know, I'm sure we'll come on to it. Like, I bet that Ben Shelton knew exactly who his next opponent would be. And Adrian Mannarino isn't going to know until 15 minutes before he walks on court if he can help it. You know, Ben Shelton lives for the hype of trying to play Novak Djokovic, you know. Whereas Adrian Mannarino is just playing anyone who's in front of him, and he'll just do the same thing. And through the whole match, I was thinking how much I would love Adrian Mannarino and Ben Shelton to face off in just like totally different things other than tennis. One of the things I like about tennis is it feels like a coming together, a lot of different skills. Like it tests hand-eye and skill and all of those sorts of things. Adrian Mannarino's going to win. But it's also a great physical test. And all of those things, Ben Shelton's going to win. And tennis is like a combination of sort of everything. And it was just a fascinating sort of matchup between two people who just are playing the same sport, but in totally different ways.
You know how everybody talks about how loose the strings are on Mannarino's
10
racket?
10 kilos.
Yeah. That kind of goes over my head. I know the trampoline effect and all that sort of thing, but they're numbers, really, and it's a description. I actually got to see it today. There was a moment where the camera did a close-up on Mannarino adjusting the strings in his racket. And it was like spaghetti. It was like squiggly little lines, and they weren't taut at all. They were just, he was just moving them around, like they were all bunching up on the sides.
There should, you know, all the fun social videos that Tennis TV and ATP and all the rest of it, well, mostly those two do, you know, and they're always looking for a, you know, a fun little angle or theme. And it's, you know, trying to serve blindfolded or serve with your left hand if you're a right-hander, blah, blah, blah. There should be a try and play tennis with Adrian Mannarino's string tension. I mean, it would be fun and funny, I'm sure, but I also am genuinely intrigued. I mean, would they be rubbish or would they be basically excellent but sort of imperceptibly, you know, 1% less good?
Pete Sampras,
I honestly don't know the answer to that.
I want to see Pete Sampras using Mannarino's racket and Mannarino using Pete Sampras' racket, which I think is four times as tightly strung.
I mean, Matt was sitting there going, oh, maybe I should play with a trampoline racket. and maybe you should. Maybe more people should be doing it.
What, I bet Matthew does.
Why aren't more people doing it? Do you have to have the hand eye, is it just not possible for
I think
people with that unique skill to
I think
to
you
play?
Have to be able to you have to hit it the way he hits it, with the short tape back and everything flat and bunting and all this stuff.
He's just playing a different sport to everyone else.
He just sort of times the ball about the place, doesn't he?
And I'm sure that in Gary Nathan's article, which you sort of referenced earlier in terms of that, what is Andrea Mannarino doing?
One of the all-time great headlines.
He's going to have to write an addendum.
Yeah, I have the answer, tequila. But I'm sure that Gary wrote in that actually it was kind of forced upon Mannarino to play this way. It was injury related that made him change his technique and try this out. He is fascinating. And honestly, it is a technique that does seem to save energy. Like, he's not swinging hard at the ball in the way that everyone else is. And like, he has just won 3 5-set matches in a row at 35 years old. No one in a slam has ever won more than that in a row. Like, three is kind of the maximum that you can do. Like, I think
even Tommy Robredo did that
exactly
many.
You know, some players have won four in a tournament, but three in a row is the max of a slam that there's ever been.
Astonishing.
I think Goran Ivanisevic won four in a row at the Olympics.
That rings a bell from when we did Tennis Relive.
Yeah.
But, like, Mannarino did not look out on his feet at the end of that match,
he wasn't.
Did he?
Ben Shelton was.
Yeah. Ben Shelton
big
was
time.
Gassed.
Absolute. I mean, he didn't know what had hit him. He looked quite upset when he left the court, I thought.
And that's the thing when we were in commentary, is you actually have to pick your moment when to get hyped up.
Mm.
You know, it's so electric when he does, but you exhaust yourself. You cannot keep that up all the time. You've got to be able to ride it out. And Mannarino, as you say, I mean, look, players with sliced backhands conserve energy. Every shot Mannarino hits conserves energy. His whole demeanour conserves energy.
He's doing a lot of running, but the actual hitting of the ball requires no energy at all for Mannarino. I mean, it's like it's sort of happening to him and his arm's there with a racket at the end of it.
I think he might be becoming one of my favourite players.
Oh, my. I knew this was going to happen.
What a turnaround.
What did you make of his... He did a kind of...
Our WhatsApps about Mannarino should never be exposed.
I've turned around. Yeah.
There were two pockets of very vociferous French support in the crowd tonight.
Ends
and they,
of the stadium.
And they were kind of doing a question and answer type. they were in tandem... they broke out into the Marseillaise together when Adrian Mannarino. It was actually a bit inconvenient because Adrian Mannarino
joined in.
It was in the middle of the interview, and Adrian Mannarino couldn't hear the question, and then they were drowning out Mannarino's answer. But
if he was more of a showman, he'd have probably said, "I tell you what, let's just let this finish, shall
yeah,
we?"
Yeah, if I had been doing that interview, I would have got Adrian Mannarino singing the Marseillaise.
That it was a beautiful moment because they sing it so wholeheartedly.
It's wonderful. It's goosebumps every single time. But before that, Mannarino, after winning the match, he goes over to his bag. He does a very understated celebration. And then he gathers up. Somehow he's acquired
so many towels.
So many towels. And he runs over to the group of French supporters, and it's like he's that. Now, 6 months ago, I didn't know this job existed in the world. The bloke at the NFL with the T-shirt cannon.
Oh yeah, they're good, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think that at the time when I was in the stadium. I was like, why aren't we doing sport? Why is there someone with a T-shirt cannon? But this isn't what I came for.
Why are
anyway,
the men
but,
bending over?
Yeah, Adrian Mannarino goes full towel cannon and starts just distributing towels into the crowd, and then he starts sort of jogging around doing a little victory lap.
Mm.
Wild times on the Kia Arena. Absolutely wild. And he now plays Novak Djokovic.
Who was on it tonight. I mean...
Please tell us about that, because honestly, that match passed me by tonight. I was so focused on this Shelton Mannarino match.
Yeah, my experience of this match, the Djokovic match, was exclusively through Hannah's tweets, which were punning on how Etcher very very uncompetitive it was.
Yeah, and actually it's quite interesting looking at the head-to-head. He'd got him in one tiebreak, I think, and then the other sets were uncompetitive. I had been a little bit taken in by his wins over Andy Murray and Gael Monfils, and could see a way that he could make this really hard for Novak Djokovic. But I also knew that there was a chance that Djokovic could really turn up. And at some point, in all of these 24 Grand Slam titles and all these 10 Australian Opens, there's a moment. I always think of the moment he won Wimbledon after having the elbow problem. It was the one against Karen Khachanov. Mm. And he just suddenly looked like the more powerful player against a guy with that forehand. And tonight was the night. He came on. He was unencumbered by stress. Yes, I still think he's still blowing his nose a bit and all that sort of stuff, but he got that look in his eye, clarity of thought. I'm going to take this guy out. And he knew exactly what to do on every shot. And really, I mean, Echeverry had a bad day. He really didn't play well. And I think, I mean, he idolises Djokovic. Maybe that was an element of it. But he just looked like he had no bite on his strokes. He looked like a hitting partner for Novak Djokovic, to be honest. And I know that sounds quite mean, but when you watch the rallies, he hits a lovely ball in a rallying context. And then it was just, is Djokovic in the right frame of mind? Yes, he is. Okay, he ends the rallies. And it just was time after time after time. I think hot conditions with Echeverry being unencumbered by the sort of stress of it all, because he kept missing shots he wouldn't normally miss. But Djokovic just showed why he's won them all. He plays the guy, he's still, even at this age, able to play a 24-year-old at his own game, outlast him, and then pull the trigger. It was pretty awesome.
Can Mannarino's weird box of tricks do anything to Novak Djokovic?
I haven't looked at the head-to-head between them. I think it's 4-0, actually, isn't it, between the two? I
mean, he's never beaten him.
Stands to reason. I don't think so. I think he'll guide the ball about. What I hope is that Mannarino doesn't have an issue with the occasion and that he plays as he can, because then it would be nice to see, you know? But I don't see him troubling Djokovic. I really don't.
Mm. Tend to feel the same. Jannik Sinner, you know how we were talking before the tournament, or I was saying before the tournament, that Jannik Sinner's sort of presence in it, I kept forgetting about him, even though he's a big feature of my predictions and I expect him to have a big tournament and all the rest of it. He's just not sort of there for me, because he's winning so easily and he's winning during sessions and at times when other matches are happening that are more competitive and are more sort of demanding of my attention.
They've all been early, haven't they?
They've all been early. They've all been one-sided kind of straight away. So I've ended up going, okay, well, that's just Sinner playing great. Don't need to watch that for podcast purposes. If something interesting happens, I'll return to it. So still, I'm just sort of not really. I am aware of Sinner being here, but I'm just not really engaged with it.
He's doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing, and therefore we're sort of deferring him until week two,
right? And that is what should happen for top players. Like, we've noticed Jannik Sinner in the first week of slams because he's come unstuck a bit, or he's got himself involved in a match that is sort of worthy of really talking about. You know, this is the first time he's reached the second week of a major since the COVID French Open without dropping a set. You know, it's just a clear elevation, and he's just being more ruthless, more efficient. So that's, you know, that's a good sign, I think. And he absolutely crushed Baez today.
Six games. Yeah. No, four games lost to Baez.
You know,
these are good draws.
It's been a very good draw.
They are. And And that's an interesting one because he could do with a test now, I think, a sharpener, don't you think?
I do take that point. Who is it?
It's Sashinov, who beat the best player in the world today.
Yeah,
that is a test.
Their matches have always been long. I was looking at their record. They've had 2-7-6 in the decider and 1-6-4 in the decider.
See, Sinner does not need that.
No.
He needs to be... I mean, he's not going to beat this guy 2-2-2, but he needs to not be beating him 8-7-6 in the fifth. It needs to be three close sets or four sets.
Will it be?
I'd say yes.
I think so. Look, Khachanov was impressive today in that he was really good in the big moments. You know, he's so tough to put away, so solid, so reliable.
What a pro he is. He's such a great pro, isn't he?
And since Sinner last played him, I'd say Khachanov's got better at slams. You know, he's really stepped up and he constantly reaches the second week of slams, you know. But Thomas Mahach outplayed him today. I mean, it was that match was all about the big points. Khachanov was 2 out of 3 on his break points, and Mahach was 2 out of 19. I mean, the chances just kept coming and going, and you know, he was brilliant. Mahach, loads of winners, not even that many unforced errors, but it was sort of when it was the points you win rather than sort of how you win the points, I suppose.
Grand Slam tennis in a nutshell. Yeah, it absolutely was.
But I just think Sinner is a combination that can outplay Khachanov and win the big points as well. I trust Sinner at the moment.
What is Thomas Mahach's ranking going to be at the end of the year?
30.
He's the best player in the world, David.
Give him 18 months. Listen, I think there still remains a big question mark over his temperament and his ability to win these sort of matches. Yeah. Because
he needs a bit more action of in him.
Yeah, I mean, he was the better player for a lot of the match, and yet he lost it in four sets. And that can't happen if you're going to get your ranking where maybe your potential could get it to.
Yeah, like that. I don't think there's a player really right now with a bigger gap between their talent and their potential versus their ranking and their results.
And I think Sinner is a really great example of what you can do, both with talent and mastering the moment.
I mean, 30, if it's 30, and I think that's about right, I think that would be a really...
75 at the moment, that's a massive jump.
That would be a very good season.
Get,
and him, I think
get
he can
himself
have that.
Seeded at slams.
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's about right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think his ceiling should be higher than that longer term. But yes, for the end of this year, I think that would be fine. Get yourself seeded at slams.
Yeah.
Take it from there.
We're like a sort of consortium of advisors because we like him.
We started today thinking the projected Tsitsipas versus Fritz fourth round match would actually quite possibly end up being a Luka Van Asch versus Fabian Marijan fourth round match. That's certainly what our predictions thought it would be, David.
I was watching all this very closely at the time.
I went for Van Asch and David went for Marijan. And that's because we don't trust either of them. And
I went for Mahach.
It's been a great day,
Why
guys.
Do you lot listen to this?
and maybe we should have more trust in both of them. Or maybe this was about a golf and experience and class today. But I don't know. Where are Stefanos Tsitsipas and Taylor Fritz in terms of this tournament?
Do you know, I think the difference is more about their opponents, in that it shows the difference between somebody with loads and loads of talent and potential, and Mahach, we've just explained it, really, and people who know how to win matches at Grand Slam level. Now, particularly Taylor Fritz has failed at that a lot of times. He lost to Brandon Holt, didn't he? He lost here last year to Alexei Popperin. He just looked like a good pro today who did his job. And Marijan won the first set, played out of his mind. I kind of feel like his top level might be higher than Fritz's top level in little p peaks. But then his body started to let him down, and Fritz knew what to do. He just knew how to handle him. Tsitsipas, I watched quite a bit of that, and I don't feel like he's where he needs to be. He's not at the moment the player he was beating Roger Federer and getting to the final of this tournament a year ago. I think he's a long way off.
What was the service situation today? New action, old action?
I can't say I watched it closely. He just doesn't give me total confidence that he's got it all under control at the moment. There was a time when, unless he faced Daniil Medvedev or Rafael Nadal or Novak Djokovic, I thought he was the next best thing. I just don't feel like that at the moment. He doesn't give me confidence, security. There's not a sort of solidity to him that there used to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of his happy place, I think, Australia, isn't it? Like, he does perform well here. I mean, four of his last five visits, it's taken Medvedev, Djokovic or Nadal to beat him here. And honestly, I think we might be in that situation again. Like, I would probably back him to beat Fritz. And it's pretty close. But then, you know, you are sort of where they are in this tournament. I think both of them are in that category of, we're going to lose to Novak Djokovic in the quarterfinals.
I don't feel like Tsitsipas lets his brain beat him. I feel like he really rates himself. Whereas I think Fritz sometimes walks onto the court with an imposter syndrome. And today he didn't, because he was playing somebody lower ranked than him. But I don't know what the stats would say, but I don't think Fritz beats that many players ranked higher than him.
I feel like they've both got very complex psyches, in that they both have a bit of imposter syndrome, but also a bit of arrogance about them. You know, particularly Taylor Fritz on that front. I think there's sort of a weird mixture of a touch of entitlement, but also more than a touch of insecurity. I can't stop hearing him saying, she's never seen my pace, about Katie Bolter at United Cup. Jessica Pegula saying, you've got to stop hitting to her with pace because she likes your pace. She's never seen my pace. I just can't stop hearing it. Anyway, sorry, Taylor. Last bit of business on the men's side. Dumoulin, he's had a pretty clinical first week, Alex Dumoulin, hasn't he? By reaching the fourth round.
Apart from that one set he lost to Milos Raonic.
We don't talk about that, Matt. We don't talk about it. Look.
Raonic was serving out of his head.
Out of a tree. He's reached a seeding by reaching the fourth round, hasn't he? So to kind of exceed his on paper potential at this tournament, he needs to beat perennial Grand Slam quarterfinalist Andre Rublev, who took care of Sebastian Korda tonight pretty handily.
Yeah, and Korda, I don't think, helped himself by having long matches to get to that point. I can't say I watched it, so I can't give a great insight into it, but I am absolutely fascinated by Rublev against Dumoulin in so many different ways. I don't think it's the greatest matchup of styles. Like, Manorino-Shelton was just a joy because it was so weird. But Rublev and Dumoulin, there'll probably be a lot of samey rallies. But with the Australian crowd and all that's at stake and the hype around Dumoulin, there's never been more reason to hope for him than this. And yet he's playing somebody who's right there in terms of his level. You know, he's playing good stuff at the moment. Rublev, fascinated. I suppose we've got a couple of days to really work it out, but I feel really on the fence as to who's winning that.
Yes, pre-tournament I went Dumoulin.
Same.
Coming through that quarter. I think I'll just edge still for Dumoulin. Like,
he's been convincing.
Do you think his variety might
and
do
he,
it
and
for
he's,
him?
You know, we've that all been watching backhand. The Channel 9 coverage out here, and the words weight of a nation on his shoulders are not underused.
No. And actually, I suppose we often talk about how his best stuff comes at Davis Cup and United Cup. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of similar, really, isn't it? Because he's at
it's all
home.
On him now. Storm Hunter went out tonight. It's all him.
And again, we were talking about scheduling the other day. I wonder whether, you know, does that get the primetime night session slot over Djokovic Manorino? Djokovic hasn't had a day session match here for ages. He played all night sessions last year. He's had them all here this year.
It's Sunday, isn't it? I suppose it's easier to schedule somebody in a day on a Sunday. Like, you could put Dimonor on a Sunday afternoon without costing yourself viewers. I'm only guessing, but that's my expectation.
It's not going to be hot on Sunday, according to the current forecast. So if the tournament is saying to Djokovic, we want to put you on one day session, you know, out of fairness, you know, his team might think Sunday's probably a good day for it. There are currently in the forecast, there's a couple of really hot ones later in the week.
Of all players to make it physical against, I almost wonder whether Djokovic wouldn't mind it being against Manorino rather than guiling and guiding the ball around at night. Mm.
And honestly, I know we spoke about Manorino didn't seem that tired at the end of the match. He's played 12 hours of tennis in three rounds. Like
15 sets?
Yeah. Like, I don't
35.
Think...
35.
Yeah. Like, I think Djokovic has got him.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
On to the women's draw now. Just before, though, I tell you about 16-year-old Mira Andreeva, who I got to commentate on earlier, I want to tell you about On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. As you know by now, we are proud to be sponsored by On Location throughout the Australian Open. And as you also know, for the first time in history, official Paris 2024 travel packages from On Location are available online, making it easy for you to enjoy the thrill of the Olympic Games and the wonder of Paris like never before. Your Olympic Games adventure comes with guaranteed tickets to the sports events of your choice and accommodation in Paris, plus world-class hospitality and options for custom tours and activities to immerse you in French culture, food, shopping and more. Oh. On Location's wide range of official travel packages has been created to suit every need, from shorter stays such as the Discover 2024 package to longer ones like the Explore 2024 package. All include guaranteed tickets to sports events categories A to D And they come with multiple possibilities for add-on services and elevated hospitality options that you've been hearing about throughout the week. Just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast, toursfortennis.com/podcast, and select Olympic Games Hospitality to see what they have to offer. Packages can be purchased online, or a dedicated on-location team member can contact you directly to create your perfect package. And of course, the link to check them out is available in our show notes and our newsletter. And the last couple of days, I have had two French players to commentate on. I've had Clara Burrell yesterday, who beat Jessica Pegula, and I had Diane Parry today, who came pretty close to beating Mira Andreeva, and I got Olympics chat into both commentaries. If anybody needs to know what the official qualification regulations are for singles at the Olympics, I'm your gal. And let me tell you, it is complicated.
Oh, I was going to say, what are they? I'll leave it.
No, it's really, really complicated. So I won't bore you with it now. I'll just say, I think that's going to be a big part of Diane Parry's, the first 6 months of her 2024. And all French players, I mean all players, but French players in particular in her situation, she's 72 in the world at the moment. She's French number four. France will be able to have five singles players because there is a clause in the qualification. It's supposed to be capped at four within the rankings limit. I've said that I won't explain it.
Sounds like you are.
Here I am explaining it. Anyway, basically, she's sort of a bit on the cusp at the moment, okay. And she could do with getting a ranking up to make sure of Olympics qualification. If I'm Diane Parry right now, that is all I'm thinking about.
And probably not the best mood because of today.
No.
Sorry, can I ask a question about it?
Yes.
Does she need to get her ranking up just on its own, or more so in comparison to the other French players?
Both. So she needs to, at the moment, she's okay in terms of her relativity to other French players,
right,
because
it's four.
Four can qualify. And in
right,
fact, from France,
thought.
Five can qualify. Yeah. So Océane Dodin behind her,
okay,
who's through to the third round and plays tomorrow.
So is she cheering for Dodin's opponent?
Well, no, because Dodin's opponent is Clara Burrell. It's all very French.
It's a whole thing.
You need to be in the top 56.
Right.
So it's a 64 draw, and the top 56 qualify automatically with a cap of four players from each nation. I very much ended up explaining the whole thing, haven't I? Anyway.
How come she nearly won and then didn't?
Well, there's a question, David. I mean, the big answer to that is Mira Andreeva and how goddamn good she is. There's other things here as well. She tightened up big time, Diane Parry, and I think she's got a game that doesn't resist tightening up particularly well. I think Mira Andreeva figured her out and continued to figure her out over the course of the match. Look, early stages of this, it was a very odd scoreline. It was 6-1 first set to Parry, 6-1 second set to Mira Andreeva, and she's 5-1 down in the decider, is Mira Andreeva. And it looks like we're going to have a beautifully symmetrical scoreline. And I was getting excited about that.
There's all else to pink.
But then when it becomes clear that it isn't going to be symmetrical, the only acceptable scoreline is 7-6.
Absolutely. I was manifesting as soon as Andreeva broke back for 5-2, I was like, well, it's got to go to a tiebreak now. And I was sending that energy out onto court.
Successfully.
Absolutely. Diane Parry is, think Amélie Mauresmo. That is absolutely the mould. And that's not just a lazy, I hope it's not just a lazy comparison because she's French and has a single-handed backhand. There's more to it to that in terms of the heavy, heavy topspin, the knifing slice. She's got a very interesting game, a game you don't see very much of at all in tennis these days. And it was so different for Andreeva to the match that she played 2 days ago against Ons Jabeur. It just couldn't possibly have been more different for her conditions, opponent, everything. She immediately rocked back on her heels. Diane Parry, she does have an injection of pace, but she doesn't. She only uses it to end the point. She mostly uses the spin, and Andreeva was backing off. The spin was rearing up so much on her. She's only 5'7", Andreeva. She was letting herself get pushed back, and she doesn't have great power, Andreeva. She's a great absorber of power. She's not a great creator of power, and she couldn't hit through this spin. She was pushed back in the court, and she looked pretty impotent, really. And then she goes off court at the end of the first set, and Diane Parry has all this time to think about things, and Andreeva just starts weaving a web, and suddenly she's just using the channels brilliantly and hitting these incredible, doing all the things she did against Ons Jabeur 2 days ago. And Diane Parry's rocked back on her heels, and suddenly you can see her mind scramble, and she's injecting the pace at the wrong times all of a sudden. You know, she's not thinking clearly about when to pull the trigger. And then Mira Andreeva in that deciding set, she was, you talk about on the ropes, she was on the ropes and more. And she was, as she told us in her press conference afterwards, she was thinking just one point at a time. And, you know, she talked about facing match points, and she was thinking, oh God, why have I done that on match point? this is over. But one game at a time, steadily. And the match just came alive midway through that deciding set. She suddenly got the crowd with her. It had honestly been quite a flat match. There wasn't a spare seat in the house on court three. You know, word of Andreeva has spread. They'd come to see her, and it wasn't what they came for. It was one of those sort of slightly,
what's the fuss about?
What's this then? Vibes. But it just transformed in a split second, and Andreeva transformed, and suddenly she's this teenager conducting thousands of people. And as soon as we got into a deciding set tiebreak, it really felt like there was only going to be one winner. And the way she just draws opponents into her web, you know, you could see Parry thinking, I know I'm getting drawn in. I know what's happening here. I know why am I hitting this shot? Why am I about to do this? Don't do it. I've done it. And she's you could see it all happening, and yet it's just completely irresistible. And she's irresistible as a prospect, isn't she? I mean, what a press conference she gave after that match. It was press conference of the week, Matt, wasn't it?
Oh, it was gold. I mean, my experience of this match, I enjoyed watching Matt Fussman's face, which sounds like a weird thing to say, but he's in my eye line.
I caught a glimpse of Matt's phone earlier, and he was showing me a message he'd just received from Matt Fussman about the Manorino Shelton match, and I caught a glimpse of a previous message, which was an apology from Matt for being creepy.
I could just see his face, and I could tell he was watching a match. But, you know, there's lots of matches going on, and I was playing a game with myself. Which match is Matt Fussman watching? Can I tell from looking at his face? And I said, I reckon that's an Andreeva face. There's a look of just wonder. And he was like, oh, yeah, of course it's Andreeva. He is sort of very intrigued and, I think, stimulated by sort of her matches. And, he, the reason I mentioned that story is because he was in the press conference with us.
We sort of had a three-on-one, didn't we?
Yeah, we did a bit, which was nice. And yeah, she's fantastic. She's as good in the press conference room as she is on the court, and that's as high a praise as I can give. And it felt like a really important press conference because she was on court three and there was no on-court interview, which is,
egregious.
I just don't think Mira Andreeva should be scheduled on court without an on-court interview. It's one of the moments of every day when, you know, what is she going to say that is going to encapsulate this match in a pithy, perfect, funny way?
Matt feels so strongly about that take. He asked Andreeva about it. He was like, do you feel annoyed? You weren't on a court with an on-court interview?
I'm always trying to project what I feel onto these players.
Yeah. Answer, Andreeva is less annoyed than Matt. Yeah. Here's us bragging about our 3-on-1 with Mira Andreeva. David had a 1-on-1.
I did, yeah. And we had a... it's 3.5 minutes long, this interview. And that's all I needed. You know, my three questions were one about the comeback. And she said that she started to realise all she wanted to do is get to the 2-hour mark. That was her goal. When she said, I noticed on the clock when I was down 5-1 that it was 1 hour and 35 minutes. And I thought, wonder if I could get it to 2 hours. And I thought, what a fascinating way for the mind to work, you know. And she did say she thought she'd lost, you know, she thought, I'm not going to come back from this. And that often helps, doesn't it? My next question was about the fact that Andy Murray had tweeted about her and called her a winner. He praised her mental strength and concluded, she's a winner. And I asked her, what does it feel like to have your mental strength praised by Andy Murray and to be called a winner by him? And she said, I know he did that. I'm going to print that out and I'm going to carry it with me wherever I go. It was so sweet. Go on, Matt.
I was going to say, I've been David Law influenced because I asked her the exact same question in the press conference.
Good lad.
And she gave the same answer.
and then I just asked her, what is your tennis dream? And she said, well, it's not for right now. And I know that most players will say that they want to be number one in the world and things like that. But I want to be remembered. I want to be remembered the way that Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal are remembered after they've finished. Wow. That's what I want. What a thing to say.
What a line.
Wow. You know?
And for some reason, you don't come off it thinking, you arrogant little... You don't. You just think, oh, bless you. You know, good luck is all I ended up thinking. And I hope people don't hold this stuff against her. I hope that people are as amused and taken over by as I am. I think she's charming and refreshing and it's wonderful. And we have a bit of a responsibility in the media. I've said this before, not to make her go into a shell. She needs to feel comfortable in these surroundings because she's wonderful.
Yeah, there she is in her press conference talking about how she spends her free time watching YouTube videos of old tennis matches. Mm. She's one of us.
That was a brilliant answer to look after your question, Catherine.
Yeah, I asked her about the Martina Hingis comparisons that are rife. You called it as early as anyone, David, but lots of people are making that comparison. Because it's such a striking one. I just thought, God, I mean, Martina Hingis' singles career was before Mira Andreeva was even born. You know, it would be completely legitimate if Andreeva's a bit like, who's this Hingis person?
I mean,
it would make us all feel ancient, but like that would be reasonable, I think. So I kind of asked her how aware she is of that comparison and. Yeah, if she is aware what she makes of it. And she said, I am very aware and I've made a point of going back and watching loads of her stuff on YouTube and I love her matches. She started talking about her French Open final about Steffi Graf and it was a final with Steffi Graf, which she said she'd watched multiple times, including quite recently.
This is unprompted. It's unreal.
And I was thinking, shall I just... mention Tennis Relive to her.
I was like, I've got a podcast series for you.
Should I just give her a free subscription? because I really think she'd love it. She said, yeah, when I go back to the hotel, I watch, you know, I watch live tennis. And when there's no live tennis on, if it's the off season or whatever, I just go on YouTube and watch old matches. And I just wanted to go and hug her and sort of invite her into the gang.
and she gave a deep dissection of the Martina Hingis game in terms of, you know, sort of the elements that she thought were similar and stuff that was different. She spoke a lot about how Hingis liked to come forward more than she does. And I do think that is an area that is an obvious area of improvement still for her, like at the net.
And she's very aware of that.
Exactly. But she's like, I can win rallies from the baseline.
Yeah, she's framing it as I don't need to come to the net so much.
I'd love to ask Hingis about her because my guess is she would love her.
I hope
because
so.
Because Hingis spoke kind of like this. She didn't have the humour that Andreeva has, but she had the sort of cockiness, you know.
Yeah, and some other stuff.
Yeah, and some other stuff.
Yeah. Mira Andreeva plays Barbora Krejcikova next, who's downed the last female sensation standing. Storm Hunter won the first set and then lost the next two in front of about 12 people on the Rod Laver Arena, including David Law. So yeah, it's still a good crowd. But
yeah, I mean, listen, there were a few hundred, and when she made a little response, they made some noise. But another great shame that so many people had just gone home, really.
There was a man with a kangaroo inflatable doing his very best with the vibes.
He was giving everything he got. And Storm Hunter played very well and probably should have won. She got really close in the second set. Didn't take her break point chances. Once those had gone, it was over, really.
So it is Krejcikova and Andreeva in round number four. It is also Sabalenka Anisimova.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sabalenka has lost just 6 games in 3 matches. It was a double bagel today against Lesia Sorenko. She said in a post-match interview that more bagel sets was one of her goals for 2024. She said, I saw how many bagels Iga was dishing out last year, and I thought, yep, I'll have some of that. And that is a New Year's resolution, I think, already fulfilled for Aryna Sabalenka. Is she, though, my question, looking at you, Matt, going into her fourth round match with a woman that she has struggled massively with in the past, is she going in undercooked?
I wouldn't say undercooked. Like, I think she's finely tuned and honed right now. Like, to me, undercooked is sort of slightly lacking in some sharpness, I suppose. And like, I think she's as sharp as she can be, especially with all the Brisbane results as well. Like, I think she's going in tip-top form. I suppose she hasn't had a close match. You know, if it were to get close, are her competitive sort of instincts right on the surface? Honestly, I would worry about that with Sabalenka sort of anyway. Like, close matches, I just get a bit worried that Sabalenka gets tense, even if she's had one in the previous round. Like, I just think that's always around the corner for her. I think the matchup's the biggest worry. I mean, a 4-1 head-to-head is considerable.
How many of those previous 4 Anisimova wins did you watch highlights of on YouTube today?
Well, you caught me watching one.
I did.
No, honestly, the 2019 match that they played here, that was their first one. I can't think of a tennis match that has left a bigger impression on me immediately after coming out of it. I don't think I'd ever seen Anisimova play live before, and she took Sabalenka apart. She was 17 years old. And honestly, look, there's some poignancy to this match. You know, that was in January 2019. Later that year, both Sabalenka and Anisimova lost their fathers. And if you think 5 years on, they've both been deeply affected by that, of course. Anisimova's coming back from the break. one of the things I think the first series of Breakpoint did was actually show the impact of that on Aryna Sabalenka as well. And, you know, she went through her yips as well. You know, like, there's been a lot going on in both of their lives. They've been in very different places to where they were 5 years ago. There was just such a freedom about Anisimova that day. And Sabalenka was, you know, not a major champion, but was a contender. So they're in very different places. You know, they're both playing this sport, which was so connected to their fathers. You know, it must ache, I think, sometimes for them to play this sport. So, you know, it's just great that they're both here at this match, I think. Anisimova was great today against Paula Badosa. That was her best performance of the tournament so far, even with an injury concern. You know, she was struggling with her stomach. She had some stomach cramps.
It was great to see her fight like that, wasn't it?
Through all of that.
Because, as she told us in her press conference after the first round, the ball striking is always there, right? No matter where everything else is. We know that when she's there, she can hit a beautiful tennis ball. But I was left with a feeling of, how much do you want this after that press conference? And I don't know if she knows the answer to that. Mm. I feel like that's what she's kind of trying to find out at the moment. But I wonder if today's match, she might have discovered or realised or just felt like she really does want this. Mm. You know, maybe not as much as an Iga Świątek, but more than she did a year ago or before that. I loved seeing her in that mode today.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's well said. And she's going to need that mode against Sabalenka. You know, I was impressed the way her serve improved. I'm always worried about Anisimova's serve. She doesn't have a good, reliable kick second serve. There's quite a lot of double faults come.
I mean, the number of times I've heard Matt say this week, oh, I'm worried about Anisimova's serve.
I am.
She should just hit backhands for a serve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, the soundtrack of Matt watching Anisimova is, why is she running around it? Why don't you get a forehand there? What are you doing?
Yeah. Look, I can't say anything. It's true. I think she might lack a little bit of the explosiveness right now to live with a full force Sabalenka. Like, she hasn't faced this iteration of Sabalenka. I do think she can trouble her. I do think you know, the ball striking can trouble anyone. But Sabalenka's a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah,
right now.
They're both different prospects than they were when they were facing off in those five other meetings.
Coco Gauff defeated Alicia Parks today, 6-love, 6-2, just domination from Gauff in the day session. She's got Magdalena Freck next. Just a really classy moment from Coco Gauff in her press conference, acknowledging the loss of Mike Dixon and the impact of that on the whole media room, and just a real sensitivity and perspective from Coco Gauff that I think was really appreciated. And she also moved her press time, and this was, you know, also something that that the WTA and ATP deserve a lot of credit for. They carved out an hour in the press conference schedule so that all the media could attend a gathering to remember Mike and just to all be together at the same time. And it felt really important, and well done everybody involved in making that happen. And the last result that we should probably touch upon from the day is Beatrice Adajmaier losing out to Maria Timofeeva, the 20-year-old Russian qualifier, 7-6, 6-3. She's got Marta Kostyuk next, Timofeeva. The big question here that many people are asking is backhand list, question mark.
Hmm. And I thank everyone for getting in touch with their suggestions.
But
I just haven't seen enough of it. Under consideration, we'll make a point. I think the whole point of the backhand list really is that the WTA Tour is a sea of incredible backhands. Like, there's so many people who can be on the backhand list. So it's, you know, it's tough out there to get yourself on it. But I mean, I'm impressed with her run generally. Like, she's beaten some tough players. And yesterday's newsletter stat was a silly one, that whenever she's won a main draw match at a WTA Tour level tournament, she's gone on to win the title. And I did it yesterday because I thought she's probably going to lose to Hadash Maia, so I'll do it now before it's not relevant anymore. But maybe it's more relevant now because she's beaten Hadash Maia, and yeah, she's won, what, six matches now through qualifying and through the main draw. Like,
She said in her post-match interview, didn't she, it was a great little moment. She was asked, I think it was Laura Robson doing this one, wasn't it? She was asked, how does it feel to have made the second week of a slam? She goes, oh, it's the third week for me, actually. Maria Timofeva, I came up with a Mira Andreeva, Maria Timofeva hybrid there. Timofeva will face Marta Kostyuk in the fourth round. So fourth round action starts on Sunday. We continue with third round action tomorrow. Zhong Qin Wen opens up the Rod Laver Arena against Wang Yifan, the all-Chinese clash. Then it's another Chinese player, Jerry Shang, the wildcard, takes on Carlos Alcaraz. I think that one could be fun. Swiatek against Noskova, first up in the night session. And then Alexander Zverev against not Phil Mickelson. Alex Mickelson?
Also Mickelson, I think.
It is Mickelson.
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Oh, I was told it was pronounced Michelson.
We'll figure it out, guys. We'll figure this out. The second court tomorrow, Tommy Paul and Mimi Kecmanovic. That's going to go on forever, isn't it? Ostapenko against Azarenka. I am commentating on that, and I could not be more thrilled. And then the night session is Felix Auger-Aliassime against Daniil Medvedev, and then Elina Svitolina against formerly of the backhand list, Victoria Golubic.
Very much still of the backhand list.
Hanging on. Right.
Fingernails.
Okay.
Let's not bump her off prematurely.
Got to have one single hander. So you should almost, you know, maybe have that as a rule.
We've got an Umber against I did what Australian TV have been doing, which is sort of making Hubert Hurkacz French. Umber against Hurkacz is on John Kane. Emma Navarro against Diana Ostrzemska. Norrie, Rude. A few other bits and bobs happening. That's your main stuff. Blinkova, Paolini, Dodan, Burrell. Yep, that is your lot for tomorrow. And that's your lot for today's tennis podcast, except, of course, to tell you about our various mascots. We have Usher, our official mascot of the Australian Open. I'm going to pop a picture of Usher on our Instagram tomorrow. Hello, Usher. Sorry, I forgot to mention you yesterday. It's been a frenzied couple of days here in Melbourne, but hello, Usher. Hello to Francis, David's mascot, to Darwin, my mascot, Hyder and Soma, Matt's mascot. We mascots, plural, we have failed you all today. Aren't you glad you picked us? Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have top folks and executive producers Greg, Chris, Jamie and Jeff, and Matt, we have shout outs.
Yes, Simon Williams in Leicester.
All right, Simon.
Hello, Simon. Like Solihull Simon.
Yeah.
Like Briggs Simon. Like Gilles Simon. All the great Simons.
Yes, and Simon says, I'd like to say thanks on behalf of my dog, Izzy, for Billie Jean Canine's occasional appearances, which she celebrates by momentarily appearing confused and then resuming the important work of sleeping for 16 hours a day.
Hello, Simon. Hello, Izzy. Love that. Bonus dog content in a shout-out is the sweet spot.
Next, we've got Matthew O'Shea, who is from Cork in Ireland, but living in Amsterdam.
Right, Matthew.
Like John O'Shea. Had a brief spell at Reading towards the end of his end of his career. couldn't move, but could lump the ball very well. Very grateful to that.
Like Matthew Ebden.
Very good. Is he a sensation?
Yes, he very much is.
Very
is,
much
he?
So.
Yeah. I don't know I'm sure he definitely is.
Storm Hunter are favourites for the mixed doubles here. And that would be very sensational.
For sure.
Mm.
Like Matthew Stockman, the Getty Images tennis photographer.
Okay. Thank you, Matthew.
And final shout out tonight is for Carol Eccleshare.
Oh, hello, Carol.
All right, Carol, like Carol Kuchera. Different spelling.
Yeah.
That's for the K. And he's a bloke.
Yeah, whereas Carol Eccleshare is Charlie's mum.
Yeah, Carol Eccleshare, like Charlie Eccleshare.
Mm. Hey.
Friend of the show and regular contributor as well, for which we're very grateful. Therefore, we're also very grateful to Carol, because without Carol, there would be no Charlie.
And when we bumped into Carol at the...
Yes, outside Euston Station. No, St Pancras.
Yeah, coming back from Roland Garros.
In a very stressed taxi situation.
She made us feel better.
She did. She genuinely did. Yeah, there's some people that it would be a nightmare to bump into in a moment like that. But actually, it was somehow really nice.
Let's run through the ones that would be.
people have got lives to lead, David. Therefore, we will wrap it up there. Do subscribe to the newsletter. Do follow us on Twitter. Do check out our Instagram. All the things. Tell your friends. Thanks for listening. We will speak to you tomorrow.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.